Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey 1450, WCTC with the Restaurant Guys. Call them now at 732-545-9282. 732-545-9282.
Hello, everybody, and good morning. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys. I'm Mark Pascal here with Francis Schott. Together, we own Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants in Brooklyn, New Jersey. We're here to give you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. You can listen to us every day from 11 to noon. Reach us through restaurantguysradio.com or download our podcasts on iTunes.
Good morning, Mark.
Hey, Francis.
How are you this morning?
Pretty good. Que pasta.
Pasta.
Yeah. it's a little food lingo. Food wake up. Hello. Good morning.
Yes.
Have some pasta.
Muy bien. I guess. Sorry. I just figured I'd go with it and it'd be over sooner. Hi, Mark. How are you?
I'm well.
I have looked at the paper recently, and there was a case involving
reading again. Are you?
Yeah, no, it's so dangerous in this country. So few people do it. But yeah, when I'm not listening to the radio, I'm reading, and it seems as though the Bronco Wine Company, which makes the Charles Shaw line of wines, mm-hmm. which you may know as $2 Chuck,
right?
Which in New Jersey was $3 Chuck because everything's more expensive in New Jersey.
well, you had to get the $2 Chuck to New Jersey.
Right, it was $2.99 Chuck.
Cost you a buck to get the $2 Chuck to New
anyway,
Jersey. It's $3 Chuck.
You know, I people ask me all the time how I feel about, well, what do you think about there being a $2 bottle of wine? I think it's great.
Yeah. Francis and I have talked about this ourselves a lot of times, and it's great. More people drinking wine, the better.
Super.
Especially if it's something of even reasonable quality.
And I think it's better. The $2 Chuck that I had was better than most white Zinfandels mm-hmm. as far as quality is concerned. And, you know, it was worth, I mean, it was $2, but it was worth $2.25.
Better than a lot of the mass-produced schlock out there.
No, I agree.
It's really,
I have to say.
You know, we're making
that was worth
it.
At least $3. That was a bargain. Anyway, no, I have to say it was great. And then it
better
got
than having a soda.
And then it got a lot of people to try wine who mm-hmm. aren't wine drinkers. It was terrific. And anyway, so but they went a little far. And it's like, okay, I get it. That's, you know, the $2 Chuck thing I thought was a good phenomenon. However, they had a line of wines called Napa Ridge, Napa Creek, Napa Ridge and Napa Creek, and Winery and Rutherford Vintners mm-hmm. They're Bronco brands, three
right.
other Bronco brands. The problem with the Napa Ridge wines, not a lot of Napa fruit going in there.
No Napa, no Ridge.
No, I think I think there was Napa fruit in there, but there's an old federal law that was mm-hmm. that said that it had to be. Hold on a second, let's see if I can
75%.
No, the California requires that at least 75% of the grapes used to make wine labeled from a particular county must come from that named region.
Mm-hmm.
There's a pre-existing federal law that sets the standard much lower. 86 federal law was more generous, allowing wine labels to keep their names even if they didn't meet the grape content requirement. Well, California passed a stricter law because obviously they've spent a lot of time and money and effort, and a lot of people have put their lives into making the Napa synonymous sure. with as that
into
known
their
as,
brand.
As a high quality growing region. Into, like
they put money into their brand. That's what
they've
done.
And they put it in collectively. It wasn't mm-hmm. just into one brand, but the name Napa means something to a lot of consumers, as well it should. So does the name Sonoma. And there are smaller appellations like Knights Valley, which mm-hmm. is, you know, an inner appellation of Sonoma.
Carneros.
Carneros, which is an inner appellation, oddly, that crosses both Napa and Sonoma. But people are putting their time and effort into these regions for two reasons, and people may not understand this out there. One is that in Europe, why we say a wine is a Burgundy or from a particular place in Burgundy, like Gevrey-Chambertin, which is a village, or Chambly-Musigny, which is a different village, or within Gevrey-Chambertin, we say it's from the Chambertin vineyard.
Mm-hmm.
It's because the magical thing about wine is that when you have wine from a specific place and you make it well and you're sensitive to what's there, it can have a unique taste that's from that specific place. And in Napa, they're working for that, and they need to be protected and congratulated.
One of the things that, that people who are really into wine find enthralling about wine and the wine business is exactly that, and you've heard us use the word terroir here. Wine will actually speak of where it comes from. And what we're saying about that is, and Francis was talking about Burgundy, you can taste Maurice-Saint-Denis. You can taste the soil and the climate of Maurice-Saint-Denis in a great bottle of Maurice-Saint-Denis. You can do the same thing with Napa and Sonoma. And I think that, that the wines that Francis and I respect, you really have those types of qualities.
But whether you believe that or you believe that's a bunch of hocus pocus, the idea is that the Napa people have spent a lot of money and time and effort into having a certain level of quality that mm-hmm. if it says Napa, and the other thing is from a consumer perspective, if your wine says Napa Ridge on label or Napa Creek Winery on label,
there's an expectation.
You expect that the grapes are going to come from
Napa. There's absolutely an expectation.
So in August 2004, the California Supreme Court overturned a lower court decision and ruled against Bronco by finding that the federal rules don't trump the state wine labeling laws, and if the state does get behind its wine industry, the United States Supreme Court will stand behind its ability to do that. And I think that's really great. So $2, Chuck, doesn't say Napa because it's not from Napa. You want Napa, you're going to have to spend...
You have to buy Napa fruit, you know, at least seven. And that's something that I think maybe our listeners don't realize. The law states it doesn't have to be all Napa fruit in order to say, to read Napa on the bottle. It just needs to have set to be 75% from the region of Napa.
Anyway, so there we go. So we have no problem with $2, Chuck, but if you're going to say Napa, you got to have grapes.
I have a problem with $2, Chuck, Napa.
Yeah, unless it's actually from Napa, if they can pull that off. Okay, next topic in the news. The Knight Ridder came out with, a couple of weeks ago, an article, and there have been a series of articles about this, which is really great, but the situation seems to be that demand now outstrips supply for organic milk.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, more than organic, it's hormone...
Hormone-free milk.
Well, milk without synthetic
right.
hormones
added. Added hormones. The... But you see this in the grocery stores, and as somebody who shops for milk 3 or 4 times a week because I have 4 children, I see it in the groceries. So depending on the store you go to, they'll be out of organic milk.
And the organic milk can be $1 more a gallon.
Oh, the organic milk can be $3 more a gallon
yeah.
even sometimes.
But you know what? It's funny. There are a lot of people out there saying that. And there's a lot of resistance to even allowing dairies that... that don't use synthetic hormones,
mm-hmm.
RCBH, recombinant bovine growth hormone, and other hormones that are added to make cows produce more milk. They haven't been able to definitively prove that the hormones wind up in the milk.
Mm-hmm.
However, there are a lot of consumers who, exercising their consumer choice, would prefer to have cows that aren't raised with antibiotics and synthetic
hormones. No RGBH. We don't need it. And again, I have children. If 10% of their calories there are coming from milk, and I don't want them to have all these hormones in it, I want an alternative. And if I'm willing to pay for it, I want the market to supply it.
But industry says that there are no hormones that make it through to the milk. Now listen. Even if you believe industry, their industry is also trying to stop you organic producers or not, hormone-free producers from labeling their product as hormone-free.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not consumer choice. And I think the Center for Consumer Freedom has a website out there called StopLabelingLies.com where they accuse milk producers of lying by saying there are no hormones in the milk because all milk has hormones. Doi. Yeah, of course all milk has hormones. The cow's
natural
hormones.
Natural cow hormones.
Right, the cow's exactly. hormones are fine. It's the ones you're injecting up its butt that I have a problem with to make it produce more milk than nature intended. I'm sorry. So the idea is, I think it's great that the consumers have spoken. We want, and organic, of course, you can put on there. And if you are organic, you can't have synthetic hormones, and you can't have antibiotics. And that's what the consumer is speaking.
We're actually in the coming weeks going to do a whole show on milk and organic milk.
And it's due entirely to the efforts of the Restaurant Guys radio show, and we really want to thank you for getting behind us. Hey, you're listening to the Restaurant Guys. We are going to be talking with someone from the Fulton Street Fish Market after the break. Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:15. Hey, you're back with the Restaurant Guys. Mark Pascal and Francis Shadow, Steve Left, and Captain Lombardi Restaurants in downtown New Brunswick, New Jersey. Jersey. And we're here talking with David Samuels. He owns Blue Ribbon Fish Company. He spent the better part of 35 years plying his trade at the Fulton Fish Market in the not-so-wee hours of the morning where we would occasionally see him. And he and his compatriots have recently been moved to a brand-new $85 million state-of-the-art facility at Hunts Point in the South Bronx. Hi, David.
How are you?
Hey, David. How are you?
How are you, Mark?
I'm doing very well. Now, I should tell everybody, let everyone know, when I first started going to the fish market a few years ago, David kind of took me under his wing and kind of showed me the ropes of the Fulton Fish Market, which can be a little bit of an intimidating place.
Must be a big wing, David.
Well, he looked like a friendly guy, and he also looked like he was sort of...
Lost,
yeah, you know, you get it, when you first get there, it's an intimidating place. You can definitely be lost.
It's not hard to discover who the newcomers are.
You're saying he stuck out like a sore thumb?
Well, only the first time.
Yeah. Was it the Mickey Mouse sweatshirt? was that the giveaway?
Well, now, you weren't wearing the right footwear. That was the beginning.
There you go.
Did you get with the sandals again?
No, I went with sneakers, which retain odor.
Yeah.
Okay,
that's so bad. All right, now let's talk about the fish market. You were down at Fulton Fish Market for 35 years. Now, that's sort of a vestige of until you moved to Hunts Point. That was like something out of an old movie, the way it was an outdoor fish market right on the water in New York and one of the most important fish markets in the country. What was it like being out there for 35 years?
It's always interesting. That, I mean, every day is different down there, and it's much nicer being where we are. Mm-hmm. It was very picturesque and very, rough and tumble, but it wasn't as efficient as a fish market should be that's in a metropolitan area like New York City.
So tell us about the move.
It went, I thought, well, Mark was there the first week. I thought it went seamlessly. It was, you know, a whole industry and, 600 working men and 2,000 or 3,000 shoppers, and I think we did a terrific job in the moving. We had a lot of delays, which I'm sure your listeners probably heard of, and over again they kept delaying it, and that sort of helped. I mean, we were really ready, and I thought it went great. And of course, it's like moving from an old car to a new car. It's a lot easier to drive the new car.
Wasn't it kind of like moving from a horse and buggy to a new car?
You know something, you're absolutely right. We, as I say, we're soaring into the 20th century. at least we're there. And the facility we're in now it was designed to be a fish market. And the other one sort of like evolved from a street market into a wholesale fish market. It's the second biggest wholesale fish market on the planet. And we move a tremendous volume of merchandise. But we did it in those terrible circumstances, so we moved to this beautiful facility, and it just seemed so much easier.
You know, it's funny, because people who weren't there, and I feel really bad, we have a bunch of pictures. We had a photographer friend who went down in the last couple of days of the fish market. And you're talking about one of the largest fish markets in the world that is an outdoor market.
It was an open-air market.
And literally, you would walk on South Street in the afternoon, and you'd sort of get a hint that something was going to go on there at night. And then at midnight, I mean, the trucks would roll in, and the forklifts would roll in, and there'd be, tens of thousands of pounds of fish moving in and out. And it was
millions of pounds.
Millions of pounds of fish moving in and out. And, I mean, you couldn't believe it. And then by 10 o'clock in the morning, it was all gone and quiet again.
Like Brigadoon.
Yeah, it was like Brigadoon.
It was gone. People, it was a very strange, it's still a different place to work every day, but it was very picturesque and it was very quaint and exciting, but it wasn't really a very good place to do business.
Mm-hmm.
It was fun, but you don't want to be quaint.
Sure.
This is the times are now where it's a very competitive marketplace. Everything is, and you don't want to be quaint. You don't want to be a tourist attraction. We want to be a business, and I think now we're really operating in a professional.
Well, you were in a situation where if it was 0 degrees, which it was on some of the nights that I was there, you were literally concerned that your fish might actually freeze.
I was more concerned with myself, literally. but it was worse. It was worse, actually, in the summer.
And that's what I was just about to go to. So now it's 100 degrees in the summer, and you got to keep your fish fresh and iced and ready to be sold.
The big winner here is going to be the consumer.
Yeah.
Whether it's the restaurant patron or the retail fish store you buy, fish is going to be, I'm going to spend less money on keeping the fish first class. It's going to move so much more efficiently. It's going to stay I mean, it's a refrigerator. It's a gigantic, it's like the Empire State Building, to give your listeners a picture of it. It's like the Empire State Building lying down,
mm-hmm.
open air, I mean, enclosed, but like a gymnasium sort of, but it's a refrigerator. It's always 40 degrees, and the stuff looks great. I mean, I think so. But
I will always remember the first time that I went to the fish market with Mark, and it was like the third time he went, and he said, it's 2 o'clock in the morning, you're coming with me. And one of the things that I liked about shopping at the fish market when it was in Manhattan is we'd be able to go out and get a bite to eat on the way there in a nice place. Well, not nice, because
not too nice. Remember the Mickey Mouse sweatshirt?
So, but we're standing there the first day, and you know, the forklifts are running by us, and it was really an improvised market. It felt like you were in a bazaar in some Middle Eastern country, and the forklift went by me really fast, and like the tire went into a puddle of fishy smelling water that splashed up on me, and Mark said, "Welcome to the fish market."
Listen, it was fun to be in Manhattan. I mean, there was a lot of cool things about being downtown, and we used to get a lot of people and girls would walk by and people would.
Hold on a second. David Samuels. David is the owner of Blue Ribbon Fish Company. He's been was selling fish on the Fulton Fish Market for 35 years, in excess of 35 years, and he's recently moved out to Hunts Point with the rest of his compatriots. We're going to talk more about that with him in just a moment. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey 1450. The time is 11:25. You know, Mark and I are always saying that long-term, good environmental policy and good economic policy are one and the same. And that's not just for the government, it's also for small business and homeowners just like you. To help us put our money where our mouth is, we called E2ECTA. E2ECTA uses a team of specialists to find practical ways for your business or home to conserve energy and even to generate green energy that the utility company then has to buy back from you. That generates a different kind of green for your bottom line. We've gone solar at our restaurants. We're now producing cheap, non-polluting electricity, and with the help of E2ECTA, we did it for very little money. The government programs available to get you set up are unbelievable. We're talking about grants here, not loans, but grants. E2ECTA will help you find the right programs for you, and they'll do the paperwork. You keep the profits. It's a no-brainer, people. For lower energy usage, more profits for yourself, call E2ECTA at 908-359-9300 or click on their link at restaurantguysradio.com. E2ECTA for total energy solutions. Hey, back at the Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis. We're here with David Samuels. David Samuels owns Blue Ribbon Fish Company. For the better part of 35 years, he did business in downtown Manhattan at the Fulton Fish Market, and the Fulton Fish Market has moved to the Bronx, to Hunts Point. And we were talking just before the break about doing business in Manhattan and
some of the cool things that happen when
and the pretty girls. What about the pretty girls? That's what I want
to
know.
Hold on. Yeah. I've been to the fish market. Pretty girls are few and far between.
Because I'm thinking I never saw any.
They all look pretty. It's really a man's world. I must say there's very few females. But when they do walk by, it does stop business for about 5 minutes. We don't have that so much in the Bronx. But people were out and chefs would be out. Had a few drinks, and then let's go to the fish market, and they'd wander around. It was fun. You meet people. It was interesting. A lot of people from out of the country, and especially in the last year or so when people realized we were
you weren't going to be there forever.
And we don't really have so much of that in the Bronx. We sort of like not having the tourists, but it was fun.
Do you find that fewer chefs will come now that you're out in the Bronx?
No. I can't say. You know, in some regard, there might even be more. It's you know, we have a lot more from up in Connecticut. We certainly might have a few less from people who are farther away, like New Jersey.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'll tell you, some of us have gotten really addicted to it, because by going to Fulton Street and being able to pick your actual fish, first of all, most chefs are control freaks to begin with, most really good ones anyway. So by going to the fish market and being able to choose your own fish and walk through the market, one of the things I say when, and one of the reasons we go to the fish market is, a purveyor who's bringing me fish from the fish market, well, their job is to bring me what I would consider the lowest quality that I'm willing to accept to pay the highest price for. My job when I go to the Fulton Fish Market is to find the absolute best fish I can find.
You know, you should work for me, but you're absolutely right. But it's a lot of work for chefs, and you have to know what you're doing and be willing to put the time in. But the restaurants who do have a tremendous advantage, and they're also, I mean, they're one day closer to the to the producer. I mean, some of the fish that you buy on Thursdays and Mondays when you come down is literally in the water on Wednesdays and Sundays.
Mm-hmm. Well, and you're sometimes more than a day closer, because I know some guys who have fish delivery services, and they'll pick up fish from you on Thursday, and I might not get it until Sunday or Monday. You know, and so it's...
They're very good purveyors. It's a lot of work for a chef. But, you know, you're right. Most guys who start doing it have trouble. You know, it's a shopper's market. You see things, you get...
David, we're going to come back and talk more about this. We're talking with David Samuels from Blue Ribbon Fish Company. We'll be talking more with him about buying fish and the new home of the fish market. After the news, you're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:30.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys. I'm Mark Pascal here with Francis Schott. Together, we own Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants in New Brunswick, New Jersey. We're here to give you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. You can listen to us every day from 11 to noon. Reach us through restaurantguysradio.com. And now you can download our podcasts on iTunes.
David Samuels owns Blue Ribbon Seafood. He spent the last 35 years plying his trade at the Fulton Fish Market in Manhattan. Fulton Fish Market has recently moved to Hunts Point in the Bronx, and he's here to talk with us about that today.
It's been since 1931 we've been there.
Wow. You've been there since 31? You don't look that old.
My grandfather.
Is it really your grandfather's business?
We're four generations now.
Wow, that's amazing.
It seems like everybody in the fish market has been there for that long. It's not a place that takes kindly to newcomers, from what I've seen.
I don't think kids go to college to study to go into the wholesale fish business.
Yeah, it's
yeah, but so many professions, it's hard to keep it in the family. I mean, you have a family business, and it doesn't pass from father to son. But in the fish market, again, it seems there are lots of relatives working in the same business, and it does pass from generation to generation.
The trick, Francis, is to make money, but not too much money.
Was it your intention to go into the fish business all along?
You know something? I never even thought about it. I graduated college on Friday, and I started there on Monday. I studied accounting, but I knew I wasn't going to be an accountant. I guess it was back in the back of my mind.
Huh. Now, when we were talking about the difference in quality, for the restaurateurs who are willing to, and you got to be willing to get up at midnight and drive to the Fulton Fish Market, and you got to know what you're doing there, and that can be a school of hard knocks.
And
there.
And the shopping there pretty much happens between 2:30, 3 o'clock in the morning, and 7 o'clock in the morning.
It's wrapped up. You have to know, but it's a fast study. I mean, most chefs know enough about seafood to see the difference in quality. People are there to do business. We have an intimidating, I guess, reputation, or we used to, that you really had to know somebody or it was like a bad neighborhood. You were safer if you knew somebody. But it's much more. Mark will tell you it's really user friendly.
It really has become that way. And also, though, it depends on the purveyor. And some purveyors are very outgoing and gregarious, and will take you under their wing like you did with us. And some purveyors are a little bit more standoffish.
We're wholesalers, not purveyors, but I know what you're saying.
Mm-hmm.
You have to listen. You're here to do business with us. I mean, you came down. I always respect chefs who make that effort, whether it's a little restaurant or a big restaurant. Those guys, it means something that they're a little bit, to me, more dedicated to their craft and willing to put that extra work in. The fact that their bottom line is going to, I would think, reflect their efforts as well is another thing.
Well, one of the things that I see when I go into the fish market is, it's just like anything else. There are certain wholesalers who have really, really high quality product and are really making sure they take care of their product and really at the top end. And there are certain wholesalers who do less than that. And obviously, I'm always attracted to the guys who are trying to put out the best possible product that can be put out.
But, you know, more so, I mean, as well, is that chef like you can walk around and see what's in season. The prices vary. I mean, it's just...
Sure.
They rock it up, and then they drop down because of supply and demand.
In a week.
The only thing that's still hunted commercially is fish.
Mm-hmm.
And so the prices are very unpredictable. And you can see things that are a great value or great fish and change your menu and be flexible. And I think it must be fun for somebody who's creative.
It is fun. It's fun to go into the market. And I, when I was shopping for my chef, was bringing stuff home and we were pl- playing with it the day we brought it home. But at the same time, one of the things I would love for you to talk to us a little bit about how the whole marketplace works. Because what will happen is, in the fish market, is during a certain week, you will see 80% of the purveyors have tile fish. And then the next week, you'll see 80% of the purveyors have blackfish, or 80% of the purveyors have... How does that come into the marketplace? How are you guys doing your purchasing?
That fish comes in season, or does a big boat pull up with a bunch of tilefish in it?
You're right on all counts, and then you can... It's seasonal. If the weather's bad, it's hard to catch fish in certain areas.
Mm-hmm.
Now there's a tremendous number of federal regulations that are so... I mean, there's a book of fishing regulations. It's 1,000 pages on when they can catch red snapper, what size mm-hmm. they can be, and what parallel longitude they can be at certain times. It would take a year to explain it to me, and I don't understand it. There's no red snapper certain times of the year, and then when they open up the season, they can catch them. They have no trouble producing hundreds of thousands of pounds. So it's not as easy to keep fish on the menu as it is meats and...
You know, it's funny that you say that, because one of the things when we talk about... People talk a lot. They pay a lot of lip service to a market-driven menu. And people view a market-driven menu... You know, it's really a seasonal menu. And what a seasonal menu is, I change my menu 4 times a year to reflect that, you know, I'll put tomatoes on sometime in July and take them off sometime in late September, early October. A market-driven restaurant is very different. A market-driven restaurant, and we have a market-driven restaurant, where... We go to the fish market on Thursday, and we may well have plans, and people get mad at us sometimes because I will not commit, especially to fish, for a private party that you're doing.
Right, you're having your wedding. I can't promise you that halibut's going to be on your
menu.
And
I'm not going to buy frozen halibut, so I think that generally that time of year I can get halibut. But if I can't get halibut on the market that Thursday, you're not getting halibut.
I think your customers should know that when they go to a restaurant, they want a restaurant with a flexible, market-driven menu, because what's... And also, if you go to a terrific restaurant and he has a seafood special, that's generally what's in season, he can give you be generous with. And you can't try to force the issue and have striped bass every single week of the year, whether you're stage left or La Bernardin or some diner. It just can't be done.
But you can with frozen fish, but not with fresh fish.
Exactly. And there's no reason to serve frozen fish. There's so much good, fresh product available. Sometimes there's...
I mean, if you're in Utah, maybe.
Right, different, and there are different products at different times of the year. Yukon River salmon runs 3 weeks a year, and so we have Yukon River salmon 3 weeks a year, and we choose something different when Yukon River salmon is not in season.
But, I mean, here's how I think when we talk about market-driven restaurants, they work. And the fish market is the most volatile of all, you know. You go to the fish market at night, and the sous chef one of the sous chefs will go to the fish market. Usually it's not me and Mark anymore, thank heaven.
Jason Ramos, our sous chef, is a guy in charge of that now, thank
you're
goodness.
You're well represented, by the way.
Very tired boy, great guy.
Did you notice that I stopped coming right about the time the radio show started?
Yeah.
I don't know if there's a correlation or not.
So, but here's the deal. We go to the fish market, and we have a general idea of what we want to serve, but the fish will come back, and the chef will have an email on his desk when he comes in the next morning. Didn't have this, they did have that, I saw this, it was great, I had a great price on that. And the menu will change. That's why, you know, any great restaurant needs to be able to reprint menus in-house. And we do the same thing in the vegetable market, the fruit market in the summertime. Mm-hmm. I will go, because I like going there once in a while, but someone will go to the fruit market and pick up the phone and call the chef and say, okay, they don't have this, they do have that. And the menu changes as a result of that. And the advent of those kinds of restaurants, I think, is really great. And
the advent of the computer printer.
Desktop publishing has changed the restaurant.
Has changed the restaurant business completely, and again, to the advantage of the customer.
Oh, yeah, 100%.
But you may also make a very good point. We are now, which we weren't when we were in Manhattan, we're right across the street from the fruit and meat market.
Mm-hmm.
So a restaurateur, if he really wants to spend a profitable morning...
You're doing two things at once.
...can make two or three stops at one time, and maybe he never bought wholesale meats or wholesale fish. It's something that everybody should try, I think, at least once or twice.
Well,
I think certainly great restaurant owners should. And I'll let you in on a little secret, David. One of the things that I used to do after I would leave the seafood market in the morning is I'd hang around for an hour or two, because the meat market opens at about 5:30, and I would go and pick up our meat at the same time.
It almost got a divorce as a result of that.
On occasion. In a while, a little bit of beef here
but,
and
but
there.
The alternative, just so everybody knows, is to deal with a good purveyor, but even with a good purveyor, which is rather than a big dry goods company like Sysco, but from whom we buy some stuff. But to buy your fish from somebody like that, listen, there's a piece of tuna on the truck with your name on it, and that's what you're getting. Take it or leave it. There's no, I don't like this, let me try that. And I think, you know, sourcing ingredients is more and more the role of a great chef, a great, you know, a great fish market, too.
And hey, I think it's easier now than it's ever been.
Absolutely.
Like sourcing just about everything's easier now than it's ever been. And Francis, there are some very good purveyors out there.
Oh, absolutely, 100%. But I think if you want
to
take the next step,
you
can
do
it yourself.
As a restaurateur, that he knows that you know.
Yeah, exactly. And not be afraid to send back. Hey, you're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:45. Hi, this is Francis of Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants and also of the Restaurant Guys radio show. You know, one of the best things about the restaurant business is the creative side of it. Coming up with big ideas and then turning those concepts into reality is awesome. It's what I love most about what I do. But it can't stop there. If you can't communicate exactly what it is you're doing, then you'll find yourself standing alone in your dining room, just you and your big ideas. The Mardini Group can help you get your ideas across to others. The Mardini Group is a boutique graphic design firm, and they do extraordinary work. We use them, and as you know, we only use the best. Whether it's menu design, product packaging, a corporate report, promo material, a homepage, or an awesome logo for a brand new project like Catherine Lombardi, we turn to the Mardini Group. Some small business owners don't realize how important it is to have a strong visual identity. Without it, you come across as less than professional. That can cost you trust, and that lowers your bottom line. First impressions count for a lot, and that's why you need the Mardini Group. Go to restaurantguysradio.com and click on the Mardini Group link, or call them at 718-694-9944. The Mardini Group for graphic design, 718-694-9944. Hey, you're back with the Restaurant Guys, Mark Pascal and Francis Schott. Our guest today is David Samuels from Blue Ribbon Fish Company. We're talking about the fish market, its recent move from Manhattan to the Bronx. It's one of the largest fish markets in the world, and they've recently moved to an $85 million state-of-the-art facility. It's basically, as David has described it, a building the size of the Empire State Building laid on its side and completely refrigerated inside, which, you know, really enhances the quality of the fish. I think the fish overall in the Northeast and will lower the prices to consumers, so we think.
Well, it certainly will improve it'll maintain the quality longer. The fish will be better. It'll be give us more flexibility in the selling of it. I think it's the city. I have to commend the city of New York. I think they really did a good job with this. Eventually.
So what was the holdup in the fish market from the fish market's move?
Which one? We started moving in 1979.
All right. What was the most recent?
Not exaggerating. We did start.
I'll tell you that from the time I was going in the fish market, I heard that the fish market was moving. And then there were at least three times I was in the fish market where somebody said to me, "This is it. Last week you're going to be here."
But I always said one thing. We will move by Election Day. And we did move. Well, we moved 3 days after Election Day. So I was pretty close about that. There was a lot of political things going on. Somebody sued us because they wanted to keep their franchise. And, you know, once you got into court, it took a while. But it was sort of good that it took a little bit longer. It gave us a chance to be really organized.
Get ready for it.
Let me ask you about fish.
Get ready.
Now, you've been doing fish for 35 years.
Okay.
Are you a real, well, pardon the pun, but aficionado of
yes.
fish? I mean, do you have where does your love of? I mean, do you go to restaurants all the time and think, "Ah, oh, that's horrible. I can't. How do they mistreat that fish, or how do they cook that fish wrong?"
Well, I eat fish a lot. I eat fish at home and I eat fish in restaurants. But I only go to restaurants that I do business with.
Uh huh.
And then I really have no choice but to order the fish. But if they don't know, I mean, if they did butcher it, I would certainly tell them. But I mean, I go to I eat great fish and great food all the time. I eat it at home and I eat it out. So I do business with some terrific restaurants, including Stage Left.
Thank you.
And Restaurant Nicholas and a few others in New Jersey that I really, those are the only ones I don't go to, the ones in New Jersey.
We won't be offended. It's no. Okay. Right. But I'll tell you, you have taught me a lot about fish, and I do appreciate it.
Great. You guys are a pleasure to work with. I mean, you have an open mind, and you never tried to, you know, make believe you knew more than you knew. And, you know, when you're dealing with professionals, they can always tell when you're bluffing.
Yeah.
You might as well tell the truth, and people are more than happy to help you. You know, if you have buy great stuff from me, that means you're coming back again.
Well, that's and that's where I was going. One of the things that I've said, you know, any purveyor or wholesaler can get over on you one time. they can bring you something and say, hey, this is great stuff. It just came out of the water today or whatever. I mean, there have been a couple times at your stand where you're like, you know what? You guys are about the quality of what you're doing. Don't buy this today. Buy this today instead. And every single time you've done that, I've been wholly impressed by the seafood that I've gotten from you. And that goes a long way. And that's how you retain customers.
You do the same thing in your restaurant.
Exactly.
In that you serve this and you don't say, well, we don't have striped bass on the menu today. Well, you're telling your customer the same thing in another way.
Let me throw something else out at you that I think is very interesting. It really impressed me is that, you know, we're a restaurant.
You guys are so impressed.
I know. Easily impressed.
Hey, listen, we're not easily impressed. And you know how you know we're impressed? We keep coming back.
That's it.
Well, but here's the deal. I mean, yes, we own a 125-seat restaurant. We now own 225-seat restaurants.
Maybe soon you'll own 300.
Well, but for years, though, I mean, what we buy compared to what a purveyor who buys from you and then sells to restaurants buys, I mean, I buy a box of lobsters or two. They buy 30 boxes of lobsters, yet you take as much time letting me pick through your boxes of lobsters or showing me, I mean, that's just an example I pulled out of the air, but spending the time with us, when we buy a relatively small quantity, it's almost like you guys get a kick out of the chefs being there and the restaurateurs being
there. I'm going to tell you, David, I've actually noticed that you usually spend more time with me than you do with those other guys.
Why is that? What's wrong with you?
I happen to have a lot of guys working for me who are salesmen, so I have a little bit of extra time, and I do get a kick. I get a kick dealing with people who are fun to deal with, and they have an imagination, and I can show them something and say, wow, you know, maybe I could do this or that. I don't know. I think it's fun, and it's good for business.
Now, when you sell to purveyors, I mean, the people who buy at the Fulton Fish Market, are these going across the whole East Coast? I mean, who's buying fish there?
I have customers in Montreal. I've got customers in New York and Connecticut.
And they send a truck down?
Oh, yeah. I have a customer in Greece.
In
wow.
Greece? Why would a Greek person, why would someone in Greece buy fish? Okay.
As a matter of fact, I'll give him a small plug. He owns Milos in New York, and he owns one in Montreal, and he just opened one in Athens. And the guy is absolutely nuts about having the absolute best.
Wow, that's wild. All right, now we're coming to the close of the segment, but I want to touch briefly on the most interesting part of the fish market to me is the tuna market.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us about that. How does that work? I mean, who's buying tuna? What's going on there?
Well, you know something, I don't sell it because I find it too subjective for me, but I remember when nobody bought tuna.
Mm-hmm. Right.
For sushi, I was in the fish business, talking about in the late 60s. Tuna was a very difficult thing to sell. So it's changed, and it's a very strange business in that, unlike every other kind of fish, a lot of really good tuna goes out of the country.
Yeah, isn't that wild?
There's a lot of good tuna in this country. People now take such great... The fishermen get rewarded by spending a little extra time and taking care of the quality of these things. And the quality of the tuna now and around is terrific.
Yeah, I agree. Hey, David, listen, we're coming to the close of the show. I want to thank you for taking the time to talk with us. It's been really great.
I always enjoy your company.
Thanks so much, David.
Even on the radio. Thanks so much.
Guys, be well.
Take care, man. Bye-bye. That was David Samuels. He owns Blue Ribbon Fish Company at the Fulton Fish Market. We buy fish from him regularly. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450 The Time. Is 11:55. Hey, everybody, welcome back. You're listening to Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis. We just got finished talking with David Samuels about fish. The Fulton Fish Market was downtown in Manhattan for over 170 years.
Amazing. Right under the Brooklyn Bridge, too. And a beautiful place to buy fish.
Except in a hot August night.
You would pull up and you'd be like, oh, this is so unbelievably beautiful. And then you'd open the car door and the stench would dominate everything. And I would go to the fish market. Now, even if I was with someone else who was handling the fish, even if I brought an employee who would be handling all the fish, you would just come back from there reeking of fish, of you know, whatever splashed on you. David was talking earlier about, you know, I had the wrong footwear. Because once you wear a pair of sneakers to the Fulton Fish Market,
throw
the sneakers away, you're
throw
done.
Throw them away.
So it wasn't until I got my high waters that people stopped looking at me askance.
Like you're an idiot.
But I would get home from the fish market, I would walk around the side of my house to the hose off
Strip outside.
Go into the garage.
Oh.
Strip.
I was leading you to a joke about your neighbors.
Stop. Walk into the garage. Walk in front of the washing machine. Strip naked. Put everything in the washing machine. Turn the washing machine off. Go upstairs. Get into the shower. Otherwise, my wife would kill me.
Yeah.
Because everything would stink. I'd have to.
We bought a van. Because Mark's like, I can't take my van to the fish market anymore. Can't take my car.
Well, you mean because one of the dishwashers started calling me Mr. Fish?
Yeah. In Spanish, and you didn't know what he was saying for a while. That was great. I did. I didn't tell you. We have a van, and we call it the fish van, because though we clean it every week, it smells like fish. But let me tell you something. The best fish is seasonal, and if you go to a restaurant that has some fish on the menu, on a pre-printed menu that doesn't change, I would be really leery, because there are very few fish that you can get all the time.
So, I mean, halibut right now is not really in season. It's really hard to get really good halibut, so we rarely have it, even though I love the fish.
And, you know, there's an old adage about people who use the specials to move old fish, but there's also people who use the specials because something great came in the market last night, and that's the proper use for a special. Hey, listen, I hope you've enjoyed talking about fish with the Restaurant Guys. I'm Francis Schott.
And I'm Mark Pascal.
We are the Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 12 noon.